Welcome back, 8 o'clock. Jim and the Buckeye Boy from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios, the most trusted name in automobiles. Avalanche get the win last night. Nazem Kadri facing death threats, criticism. Goes out and scores a hat trick to lead the Avalanche to a 6-3 win over the Blues last night. Chance for the Avs to finish off the series on home ice tomorrow night here on the team pregame at 5:30. Rockies, their struggles continue offensively, losing 2-1 at Pittsburgh yesterday. So if you got some thoughts on that. Also, we were talking about the Tim Anderson, Josh Donaldson situation, where Donaldson's now been fined and suspended for calling Tim Anderson Jackie Robinson. And we're not going to use this segment to talk about it. Marty sent me a piece from The Nation, and I read that, and I looked at some other things where, okay, I understand where there's the racial connection to this, and we'll go into this more next segment. We're going to talk some Broncos here right now, but I still, Tim Anderson, I think, set himself up for this kind of razzing, if you will, when you, and I get it when he was, how he referred to himself was a modern day Jackie Robinson, and it was more about not him being a player, but more about him being a black man in Major League Baseball, where Major League Baseball now has fewer black athletes than in previous years. And he was making more of a reference to the societal part of, or the relationship there, I should say, the position that he has in Major League Baseball. Not necessarily comparing himself skill set wise or anything like that to Jackie Robinson. Was Donaldson, though, trying to be a racist? I don't think he was. But that doesn't mean that I'm totally right about that.
Right.
But we've, you know, was it something, maybe it was inappropriate? I guess so. But when you made the comment about yourself, and guys in baseball sports rag on each other, you kind of open yourself up for that kind of thing. Now, if it was, now with Anderson feeling like that he's more from the, a Robinson comparison from being a black man in baseball and in dealing with the racial components of that in Major League Baseball and fewer black athletes in baseball than before, then okay, then we're walking to some territory where Donaldson probably should have left it alone. But we'll get more into that later on. Let's see. Don't forget, Nazem Kadri also had a hat trick.
We did.
We mentioned that numerous times.
I was kind of disappointed that the Blues fans didn't throw hats on the ice.
Yeah.
You know, they cheer when other players do well on the baseball diamond. Why can't they on the hockey rink?
They have some appreciation for
visiting
player.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kurt, we've mentioned that numerous times this morning already. But
you know, they applaud a nice sack bunt by the Dodgers. Why can't they applaud a good old hockey game
exactly.
from Nazem Kadri?
A well-played game last night by Nazem Kadri.
Interesting.
Apparently they are not as sophisticated as they like to say they are.
It's kind of a letdown, to be honest.
Kind of. All right. Broncos started their first day of OTAs yesterday, and a lot of the focus was naturally on the offense because, well, number one, Russell Wilson is now there. Number two, the Broncos, particularly in their red zone offense, finishing 26th, 32nd, 19th, 28th, 27th, and 22nd during the 6 years they have not made the playoffs.
And those don't sound great.
Those are not great numbers. And so that's been a lot of the focus early on, is to work on the red zone. And the Broncos spent a lot of time doing that yesterday. So we've got some audio for you. Start things out with Nathaniel Hackett. Now, keep in mind, we're going to start with Wilson, excuse me. Two guys that rarely take a breath of air.
You got to lock in. You'll miss something.
You're going to miss it. Trust me, you will miss it.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, here we go. Here's Danger Russ talking about getting work done in OTAs.
Well, I think everybody's just doing such an amazing job of studying. Everybody's on their stuff. Everybody's committed. I mean, there's guys that come in super early to work with me in the mornings, and we all kind of, you know, do our own thing as players and just spend a lot of time. I think it's got to be a player-owned thing, and that's what we're doing. I mean, it's just tremendous to see guys like Jerry Jeudy and, you know, obviously Cortland Sutton and Tim Patrick. Those guys are so brilliant, but also Beck and Sabi, and just there's so many other guys. And then the young guys, Dolchich and Montrell, M-Dub, these guys have been coming in early as well. So it's just, I think the dedication, and obviously I think you guys saw a lot of good stuff out here today, a lot of touchdowns and a lot of good things. The defense looks tremendous too. We're going to have a really good football team, and that's exciting. And we're really excited about the opportunity to play football.
Okay. Now, we catch our breath momentarily for right. Nathaniel Hackett. On Russell Wilson's first OTA.
I think it's all about just the command of the system. We want to build this thing completely around him, make sure he's comfortable and watch him come alive. I think he did some awesome things today, utilizing his athleticism, at the same time being able to be a pure dropback passer. So I think there were a lot of good things, and we just got to keep on developing that and just the integration of the system and his feels with the rest of the team.
Nat Hack also said, this is about Russell Wilson, I'll tell you, he throws the ball, it's beautiful. He's what we call a natural thrower. The guy can spin it. Watching him make some of the plays Monday with his feet, he's doing great. I'm glad to hear that, Nat Hack. I'm glad we got a quarterback that is a natural thrower.
As it turns out, Russell Wilson's a pretty good pass thrower.
Guy can throw the ball pretty well.
Who knew?
Glad we traded all those picks for a guy that could actually throw the ball really well. That is encouraging.
Oh, man.
Encouraging to moi about that. But during Wilson's first red zone period, played a couple balls, so one to Cortland Sutton, one to Tim Patrick, 7-on-7 red zone. Completed three of his first four passes, but oh, here we go. This is where we start criticizing.
Oh, did the ball touch the ground?
Touch the ground. Oh. Go out. What? Final two passes broken up by safety PJ Locke and inside linebacker Jonas Griffith.
It's all over. Send everybody
it's over.
Home.
It's over. Who wants Wilson? Who yep. wants him? We're trading him.
Man.
Tongue firmly in cheek on that, by
what
the way.
What a letdown.
So yesterday, this is a voluntary practice, by the way, so keep that in mind before you lose your mind about stuff. Calvin Anderson, outside linebacker Bradley Chubb, running back Melvin Gordon, safety Kareem Jackson, kicker Brandon McManus were not there. Present but didn't practice, Billy Turner, still dealing with his knee injury, outside linebacker Randy Gregory coming off shoulder surgery, right guard Graham Glasgow with his leg injury, cornerback Ronald Darby, safety Caden Stearns, and receivers K.J. Hamler and Jerry Jeudy dealing with back issues. So, Broncos getting their first day of work in. Now, as far as yesterday on the offensive line, because there's going to be some battles on that offensive line, protecting Danger Russ. First unit yesterday, you had Quinn Miners at right guard, Lloyd Cushenberry III back at his center spot, Dalton Reisner at left guard, Garrett Bowles at left tackle. Ben Braden worked as the first team right tackle because Billy Turner and Calvin Anderson were not available to practice yesterday. So, no Tom Compton, though. When Tom Compton, I don't see Tom Compton. Thought he was going to be in that mix. Apparently he wasn't yesterday. Anyway, for the Broncos. All right, so OTAs continue over at the UC Health Center. And, yeah, I like you. What a shock when we heard from Nathaniel Hackett. They're building the offense completely around Russell Wilson.
I don't know if they really want to put all their eggs in one basket like that.
Aren't most offenses built for the vast majority around what the quarterback can do, about what his skill set is? I mean, is this something?
Usually.
Is this something particularly shocking to any of us? No, I don't think so.
The Packers got so good when Nat Hack was there; they built around Aaron Rodgers.
Because they wait a minute, we should build around this guy. We should do that.
He's pretty good. He also throws the ball pretty well.
Also, keep it in the AFC West. If the Chargers have some injuries at linebacker this year,
yeah,
they could go old school maybe. They might have somebody be a two-way guy.
Nice.
And it might be Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert now weighs 245 pounds.
Wow.
Putting on the muscle during the offseason. So maybe a high school flashback there, right? Little inside linebacker?
Yeah.
Playing quarterback as well?
My quarterback's a deep safety. That's all it is. I'm not having him anywhere near tackling.
How about I'm not having him be on that side of the ball at all?
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. But that's a linebacker size right there, 245?
Yeah. Pass. Nope.
Yeah, but I don't think that's gonna.
There's a lot of money invested in that dude.
Yeah, Brandon Staley is not. I'm just once again tongue firmly in cheek on that one. That they would ever think about.
Right.
But he's 245 pounds. It's a big, big dude.
Yes, it is.
It's a big dude. All right. Also, Josh Allen. Not the one in
also
Buffalo. Also a big dude.
Oh.
Different. Well, both big dudes.
Also this linebacker.
This is linebacker Josh Allen, former Kentucky Wildcat.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Jags. Jags have gone 10-39 since he was a first-round pick in 2019. And Allen, this is through Pro Football Talk, said Monday that he lost bits and pieces of the mentality and mindset needed to play at a high level at points. And that was obviously evident during the Urban Meyer situation. He said, it forced Allen to reassert myself and really find out what I'm about as he heads into his fourth season.
Hmm.
And that he said, I went through the worst. It can't get worse than what we've been through. And this is from the Florida Times Union. But I know that I know how to get through adversity, so come talk to me. And he was relaying this to his teammates about dealing with adversity. I would say that after the Urban Meyer reign there, yeah, he's probably and just overall how bad that franchise has been. That's a guy that knows what it's like to deal with some bad football and some bad leadership.
Because usually, if you're a first round pick, you don't lose a whole lot, right? So, I'm sure all the losses piled on all the losses.
It's got to wear on you.
Kind of make it suck to go to work sometimes. You know what I mean? Like they live a very privileged life, but there is a lot of hard work that goes into it, and you have to get yourself maybe some mental gymnastics to get to the right place to play football, especially of all the other sports. And I gotta believe at some point that's hard. It's like, man, I am putting my body through all of this damage, right? Shaving months off the end of my life, sometimes years,
to win three football games.
To win three football games and just get berated every day by an idiot who doesn't know what he's doing. That's gotta suck, you know.
Of course, the Broncos will have the Jags this season over in London. Now, the Broncos will open the season at Seattle, Russell Wilson's old stomping grounds.
Mm-hmm.
We're working our way back to the Broncos and back to Russell Wilson.
We're apparently not a very good thrower of the football, interestingly enough. In Seattle, he wasn't. He's in Denver, he's great, but...
Apparently in Seattle, not good enough to get the job done. But Russell Wilson, you know, talking about going back to Lumen Field for the first time in that Monday night game on September 12th. He said, I think it's going to be an exciting time. Obviously, Seattle's meant the world to me over the past 10 years. It's a special place to live, special place to play, Lumen Field. I have a high regard for all those guys over there and what they do. I think for me, it's non-emotional, though. It's got to be non-emotional. You've got to be able to go into it with an understanding that it's just ball and also understand that there's been amazing times. There's been a lot of touchdowns there, won a lot of games there, so I had a great experience. It'll always be a special place in my heart forever.
We had good times and bad.
Is that a Zeppelin song for first album? Good times, bad times?
Yeah. But he always had my fill of free tickets. Sorry. That's a callback to yesterday.
Thank you. Good job.
Thank you.
Way to bring it back. It took me a moment. Thanks for explaining that. And then it jogged my memory. What's he supposed to say? Yeah, I'm ready to go in there and score 50 touchdowns on them, and I hate Pete Carroll, and I hate the
right. Deal.
He's a class guy that way. What's he just not going to be an idiot?
Exactly. What is he going to say? You know,
he's
what I mean?
And he's lying when he says it won't be emotional. Yeah. It will be emotional.
You're going.
He's telling us one thing. There will be emotion for him when he goes back there. How could it not be?
Oh, absolutely.
It's a place where you went to two Super Bowls, won a Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
spent 10 years of your life there. Very involved in that community.
Your kids were born there.
It's going to naturally be an emotional moment for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he may be all business-like on the surface, but there's going to be, understandably, feelings, emotions he's going to go through leading up to, you know, being on that field. I would think probably after the first snap It is business as usual.
Yeah.
But there will be emotion. He's going to see former teammates there. He'll see Pete Carroll, and that will probably be a variety of emotions for him, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
I would think so.
Yeah.
I mean, both some love and respect, and also can't stand you.
Right.
Don't like the way things ended up. Felt like that maybe Pete Carroll was responsible primarily for that. So
I'm having a lot of fun. How are you, Pete?
I'm just saying what he says. I'm not going to be emotional.
Hey, he's a liar.
He's not being honest with everybody and himself about that. There will be some emotion there. How could there not be? All right, 8:16, and it's time to play Triple Play Records Stadium Cinema.
Know your sports TV shows and movies? Let's play Stadium Cinema on the team.
And what do we have today?
It is it's the downtown double play with Triple Play, right? It's yes. Triple Play Records. $20 gift certificate. Easy for me to say. English first language, I promise. $20 gift certificate to Triple Play Records downtown Grand Junction. Our friends Rock and Matt at some point going to be coming in talking disc golf.
Yeah, right? we talked about that a while back, and I got to reach out to them once again to make that happen. But 536 Main Street for a Triple Play Records.
You
everything
also get a small Junction Square antipasto salad.
Yeah, everything you need to know about getting into disc golf, mm-hmm. where to play, joining the local disc club, all that stuff. Talk to Rock and Matt about that at Triple Play Records.
Absolutely. And you can win both of those certificates for the first correct answer on the text line 970-242-1340, the Chick-fil-A breakfast team text line. First correct answer, this sports movie.
Feeling better? Get in there.
It's a little hard to hear. I understand that. So I'm going to boost up the early part here. It's with you, for you.
Feeling better? Get in there.
So if you... Ooh. Are a fan of one of my favorite bad action movies. You'll know what that movie
okay.
is.
Okay. All right, so first correct answer
wins. I just gave it away for the second day in a row.
The downtown double play with Triple Play Records, gift card to Triple Play Records, 536 Main Street, and a small antipasto salad, mm-hmm. Junction Square Pizza at 7th and Main. Text only. Text in now your answer. Yep. If you won the last 2 weeks, you're not eligible to play. 970-242-1340.
I love this movie, though.
970-242-1340. We will take a break, and we'll come back with more on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network.
Yeah, I think they're like the best on the radio.
At least at the pro level, the best of the best.
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, the Team.
Hey, 21, Jim and the Buckeye Boy. David Caruso's still whipping out those shades, man.
Yeah, he is. I'm surprised he didn't scratch up his face.
CSI kind of started the whole thing, right? Of like within, and then NCIS followed with the 8 million different locations.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely a CSI thing.
Yeah. The original CSI really loved it, enjoyed it.
Until they started killing off regular characters.
And then, I lost interest. And then I don't think I ever really followed any of the other CSI. The New York one I kind of watched for a while with Gary Sinise. It was
like Gary Sinise.
Yeah, he's a good dude. The NCIS ones I've never got into. Sorry, Mark Harmon. I just never really got into those. And there was Ice Cube, Chris O'Donnell.
Yeah, Chris O'Donnell, with Los Angeles, then Scott Bakula in New Orleans. Now there's Hawaii. I've not watched. I watched maybe one season of New Orleans, but I've checked out on all of the NCIS's, mainly because now all of the characters I liked on the original are gone.
They're all gone. So you've lost interest. Now. Yeah, I don't blame you.
At some point, it gets kind of ridiculous, right? It's like, okay. My scope of believability, it's now beyond that. And I'm like, all right, I'm out. Like this one random NCIS agent is responsible for stopping this super global terrorist who just happens to be in the DC metro area. Come on now.
Sure. Like, sure they are.
At that point, I'm just like, okay, I'm out. I'm done.
All right, I thought let's do this.
I like
let's
a good procedural, right?
Yeah.
But come on now.
Come on. Just after a while, it's you've just bled that thing to death, right?
Mm-hmm.
That whole concept, that whole idea. All right, I thought we'd do this. Since 10 o'clock this morning, they'll have the seeding show on NJCA TV to announce the seeds for this year's Junior College World Series, which is still weird for me to say. It's weird to
not
talk
used
about
to it yet.
Because last year was the first year we had seeding. And so it's just still weird to talk about the tournament being seeded. And for us, when we go to prepare, pull back the curtain here a little bit, you know, we have to kind of wait to see where the seeds are before we start doing some of our prep, because we have certain games that we're slotted to do to start things out. And so those are the games you tend to focus on, mm-hmm. the games that you're doing the first weekend.
Yeah.
Because prepping for every single team, used to do that. It's not the best way to do it. The best way is to focus on the teams you're going to be doing.
And the thing I've figured is, by the time you get to Monday or Tuesday, all of the prep from this week is now kind of old, because everybody else has already used it, because it's the same information, right? And so by that point, it's just like you talk to whoever. Have you seen these guys? What do I need to know? And then you just kind of go from there.
So let's seed it. Let's go.
Ooh.
Just our own opinion.
Yeah.
From what we know.
Let's do it.
Who would be your number 10 seed?
Just based on kind of where the rest of the competition, and I don't know how good some of their wins are and how bad some of their losses are.
And these are not predictions for who's going to win. This is just seeding the tournament from what we have garnered from
mm-hmm.
talking to coaches and what we know to this point
And I've dug into a lot of the stats already, just kind of as teams start to filter in. I'm probably going to put Harford at number 10.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking as well.
Because I
would agree
that district's not great. You know, there's some good teams in there, but there's a lot of teams that aren't very good. Interesting fact, I saw this in prep. An Eastern District team, Potomac State, West Virginia, given two teams in this field their last shutout loss. Because I got a hair in a place. I'm like, what is the last time these teams in the tournament were shut out? Potomac State's on that list twice.
Really?
Yep.
Who? So it makes sense.
Yeah.
No offense to Harford, but the history, those kind of things mm-hmm. out of that district, out of the East, they'd be my number 10 as well. Let's see. Go to number 9. I'll pick this time first. This is tough. Because, geez, I would say probably the ninth team, probably Snead State.
Yeah, I can understand that. I'm looking at, you know, like rankings over the course of the season. Not a ton of Alabama representation in there. And Snead, at least from what I can see, just a quick glance, they're not even in the top 20 of the last poll released a week ago yesterday. So
they are not.
Yeah, you'd probably have to put them in there. The only reason I put them above Harford is because there are some good teams in Alabama. You know, it's an entire state dedicated.
There's some history with it.
When you have your entire state dedicated to its own district, then there's some good teams. Getting out of there is hard. Florida, Texas, Kansas. Getting out of there is hard. So I put Snead State at 9.
We'll say this, going back for a moment to Harford.
Mm-hmm.
They did have the 12th best batting average in JUCO baseball this season, which doesn't mean it's just automatically, oh, well, geez, then they must be better than what we're, you know, mm-hmm. than a 10 seed. They do swing it there.
I will tell you, there's a team in this tournament that has a team batting average of 400. I can't remember who it is, but they're in here.
Well, I know who it is because I just looked at it. So And they're going to be...
Well, they're higher.
They'll be much higher up on this list.
Yes.
Okay, so we've got Harford at 10.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Snead State at 9. Are you keeping track of this, or should I keep track of this?
I got it.
Okay.
I got mine. I can do yours, too, real quick.
So we're in agreement, though, correct?
That, so far.
Okay.
So that will be easy to remember.
So go to 8.
Okay.
Which team is the 8th seed?
This one's hard because you feel like there's 7 top 5 teams, right?
Yeah, so it's tough, right? Because all of a sudden now it gets really difficult.
And, you know, their district
Harford was 15th, by the way, yes, just so you know.
Their district tournament is really hard, and I feel I don't want to put Wabash down there, but there are some of their, you know, region and district opponents that aren't great. They have a great stat base, right, to where they are just absolutely killers with the baseball. They're the team that hits 400 as a team.
They lead the nation in batting average.
They lead the nation as a team in batting average, but again, it's competition, right? There's some of those Illinois teams that have never been here for good reason. I'm going to put Wabash down at number 8.
I mean, you work in, obviously, the team that they beat mm-hmm. twice to come here in Iowa Western, but you're right. I mean, when you look at the schedule for their baseball team, it tends to be perceives a little bit soft. They did face Chipola,
mm-hmm.
and they lost to Chipola in a close game 2-1 when they went to the Panama City Beach NJCA Baseball Classic.
Yep.
That was first game of the season. They played Wallace Dothan.
Who's been here. They handled them.
And they were in their district tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And so you look at, you know, they played Jefferson College, swept them, a team that's been to JUCO before. But then again, things change, obviously. And so, but you look at it, it's, you know, they've got Kaskaskia, who they played. And Kaskaskia has been here before, representing what used to be the Northern, now mm-hmm. the Midwest. Yeah, I tend to agree that when you look at their schedule, it's maybe, even though they're the number 2 team in the nation, maybe a little softer than... No offense to Rob Fournier and his guys.
And this is, I mean, this is just me spitballing too. So, do you have them at 8
Right now, yeah, I think we're pretty much in agreement. And this is, we have not talked about this before.
I didn't even read the rundown.
It was not in the rundown. It was, Jim came up with this.
During the break.
Yeah. Let's talk about this. Since the seating show is out on this morning at 10 on NJC
TV. So we've not discussed this.
No. This is just our gut
individual looking at
feelings,
these teams.
Yes. All right, so number 7. This is where it gets tough because, like you said, we've got 7 of the top 10 teams mm-hmm. playing in this series. Who do you feel like is the 7th best team? I'm kind of leaning toward Cali.
Yeah, I have them typed in already as my number 7. Again, like there's a lot of teams that seem to come out from Kansas. The only one that's really ever done anything here is Cowley. You know, so they get their own, you know, district.
The Jayhawk, which is now the Midwest. They're not the Midwest, it's the Plains. It's the Plains now.
And, you know, so, you know, a lot of teams get into that district tournament. There's not a lot of great games, it seems like, in that tournament. There's kind of, I don't know, I think Cowley is kind of right there. Again, and it's not about the team. It's about how good is your record and how legitimate are your numbers compared to your competition.
You know, they have Bryce Medrone, who's a really good hitter guy. Was mm-hmm. here with them last year.
They got a lot of guys back from last year.
And that's something that does work in their favor, experience mm-hmm. playing in this tournament last year. They did get to Wednesday of last year's series.
Right.
I just feel like they're... You
but
know,
like Jansen Reeder, he's coming back. Bryce Medrone, like you mentioned. David Herring.
But we got some other teams, though. One in particular that has a lot of key personnel back.
Mm-hmm. And there's 6 teams back from last year. You know, so, I mean, they're not the only team by any stretch of the imagination that is guys that have been here before.
All right, so So far, we're in agreement on that. We're lockstep on this.
It's weird. It's making me uncomfortable.
Okay, number six.
Number six. I'm probably going to have to put not the first timer, that's neat, the longest drought. I'm probably putting Central Florida, the Patriots, in there.
Okay.
Hard to get out of Florida, but don't really know a whole lot more about this team. Haven't been here since 98, you know. They have one player that's been here before. One of their catchers was here for Miami-Dade last year. But other than that, none of these guys were born the last time this team was here. You know, but Florida, the state, usually puts out a pretty competitive team for the most part. Chipola's won it three times since 2007. Miami-Dade's been in the final. Northwest Florida won it a few years ago. So the team that comes out of Florida is usually competitive. That's why, without a lot of experience in the Junior College World Series, they still would be sixth for me.
Boy, I'm going to go with San Jack. I'm gonna break ranks here a little bit. Once again, they got really good pitching staff.
Mm-hmm.
Team that's been here.
Your green and gold fan base is going to...
They're not going to like it.
Pitchforks and torches. Yeah, but your Gator haters are going to throw you a parade.
I'll go with the Gators as the number six seed.
Yeah, I was looking at their numbers. Wasn't super wowed by some of their numbers, but they do have the competition factor.
They do. That right. is something that's in their favor.
Like,
but you could say that about Central Florida, though, too.
Yeah, but that's why they got, you know, almost in the top half for Central Florida. I have San Jacinto in the top half, obviously. But, like, San Jack, some of their non-conference preseason games are, like, major league scout teams, right? So they're playing professional players to get ready for the season, and they're hanging. So, you know, their competition is legit in that district.
And you make all valid points about them. I agree. I just feel like in terms of maybe offensively, this club's maybe not got the offense that it's had in previous years.
Just here's their first 12 games of this season. Not results, opponents. Grayson, Seminole, Oklahoma, Northwest Florida State, Andrew College, Wallace Dothan, Chatt Valley, Chipola, Walters, Chipola. That's their first dozen games. That's what? There's 3, 4, 5, 8, 9, 10 championships?
Yeah, that's
before they get into their district and their conference. That's ridiculous. And then there they have Galveston, who's won it. They've played McLennan this year, who's won it. You know, Navarro, who's won it.
Look, and there's no doubt. Tons of respect for the teams that Tom plays and how good that program's been. Just kind of a feeling about it in terms of what they have this year, which, like, still don't be surprised to see them playing on a Thursday.
Look, their first 20 appearances in this tournament, until Thursday.
I mean, they're hitting .316.
Mm-hmm.
Harold Cole's had a really good season for them. It's
Lytle again, Ben Greer.
Yeah.
Same dudes that powered them last year.
I know. And you make valid points about Central Florida, about the long drought for Marty Smith and his club. I'm going to stick with San Jack at number six.
Okay.
Could easily be a number five if not higher.
I think it's your turn to lead.
And I'm going to go Central Florida number
You're
five.
Going Central Florida.
Yeah.
So we just swap on those.
Basically, I'm going to bet you we're pretty close on the rest
of
these.
We're pretty close. And I think the top three are kind of interchangeable, to be honest.
True.
And you
could say maybe the top six are interchangeable to some degree.
Number four, I'm going to go with the team that
is... Did you pick a number five?
San Jack,
okay.
So because we were interchangeable.
That's right, we flipped bot. Okay.
I'm going with the South Central champions, Crowder, Missouri. Always a good time. Always a good team, Travis Lalleman, great dude. But if we're ranking the top four, the four teams we have left, I think they're kind of at the bottom of that number four.
I agree with you on that one.
This is weird.
So we go to number three.
Number three.
Whew. I mean, I know who my number one is. I'm going to go number three, McLennan.
Ooh. Defending champs, huh?
I got them number three. Logan Henderson, they lost him from last year. They still got good, you know, some good arms and some good bats for Mitch, but I'm going to go with them number three.
Yeah, that's a good point. They lost a lot of guys. They lost their stud pitcher, right? You know,
Logan Henderson.
But so did Central Arizona. Matt Olson not coming back. They've got a lot of experience coming back too. Going McLennan number three. I think I'm going with the team that wasn't in the last game that was played at the tournament.
Okay.
I'm going with Walter State at number three.
Okay.
Hopefully that doesn't cost me some of the homebrew, but nothing personal.
I'm going to go with Central Arizona number two because they do have Wozner, even though he didn't pitch great in the championship game. They do have arms back that have pitched here offensively. You know, they just made, you know, of course, with the district tournament, going to the composite bats and from being in a wood bat league, that always, I think, is a plus for the ball clubs coming out of the West. I've got them number two. So
you're number one.
It's Walter State.
Walter State. I have McLennan number two. I think they've lost a little more, even though Matt Olson was huge. They lost more with Logan Henderson, I think, than Central Arizona. And maybe this is just because I spent a lot of time on the Vaqueros yesterday afternoon. They're kind of steamrolling people. Yeah, they had a little trip up in the district tournament, but we talked to Anthony Gillich yesterday. They're survive in advance the last 3 weeks,
been
essentially.
Tough.
And that's a team that just kind of grinds. The DB Niners, there's the mystique about the name, right? They just kind of grind, and I have a feeling they're going to be there. We're going to have Anthony Gillich as part of the roundtable again.
Yeah, and I think we'll probably have David Shelton too. I mean,
yeah, probably.
Caleb McNeely's having a great season after last year with Walter State. Their ERA is 2.63. It's the best.
Their balance. Their ERA is the
best. Their ERA is the best in the country right now. So they've got the pitching to go along with what's always been a really impressive offensive attack for the Senators. So that's why the nation's number one team, as the number one team in this.
Yeah, I totally understand.
And we're not meaning to slight anybody. It's just us thinking out loud about it here on the radio. Yeah.
For me, the putting Walters third, I feel like it's weird. I have to kind of defend it, right?
Right.
But I mean, with the two teams that were in the championship game back,
yeah,
I got to put them 1-2 just on experience factor.
But I also think Walter State, they know what it's like to be here and win it. And
my top five and yours, except for Central Florida, all teams that have been back from last year.
And look, and with San Jack, they could easily be number five, number four maybe in this deal too.
Yeah.
All right, 8:42. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk more JUCO with Jamie Hamilton, chairman of the Alpine Bank Junior College World Series. That's next on the Jim Davis Show.
Craptastic.
That's just crap.
The team presents the Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, the team. It's time to talk Alpine Bank Junior College Baseball World Series on the team.
And with us this morning in studio, one of the busiest guys I know, chairman of the Alpine Bank Junior College Baseball World Series, Jamie Hamilton, with us. It's here, Jamie, the week before the series starts. The seeding comes out today. Buckeye and myself, we had our selections, and I've got Walter State number one. Buckeye, you've got Central Arizona number one.
Yep.
So we will not ask you to go for all that. But the seeding show is on at 10 o'clock this morning on NJCAA TV. So now it's a case of need them to announce it, so you can get the program out and get everything rolling.
Yeah, you know, and we do get those calls from parents. What time was our game? And we're trying to see if we come in that Friday, or they're not playing till Saturday night. We'll get that done. So a little bit different, but again, we just host. They tell us what to do, and we're We're happy to do that. But changes over my career, our career, sometimes it's a little aggravating, but we do it with a smile, Jim.
That's right. A smile, and welcome to Grand Junction. And thanks for coming to the Junior College World Series.
That's right.
So we have the two teams that played in the championship last year back, defending champion McLennan, Central Arizona. And so that provides an interesting storyline heading into this year's series.
Yeah, I mean, great coaches and great people and great organizations. They got some depth, some experience already of playing here and with some of their players, and that's always helpful to kind of get over the stress of playing in front of a number of people when they're usually playing in front of maybe 100 or 200 people. So everything's good there. Cali County, with their experience, and Lefty is their coach. I saw Twitter. They were on the bus early this morning, so hopefully they make it through, because at the same time I watched a news report that said I-70 was closed in the mountains because of snow.
Oh,
so he might be stranded for a little bit, but they'll get that cleaned up, and they'll be in here. San Jack arrived yesterday, so we got all our host committee just running around getting everything done and finishing up some of the final things that we need to get done.
Alpine Bank Junior College World Series Chairman Jamie Hamilton with us today on the Team Sports Network, and in reference Lefty Darren Burroughs and Cali, four straight walk-off wins in their district tournament to win the Plains. That's a team coming in with a lot of confidence, playing some great baseball.
And we've talked about this before. As you have a collegiate team and had that many games, you want to start okay, but get to there, as opposed to being high and then get beat by a walk-off yourself. So I think that's going to get them the confidence, as you just said, that they need. Plus, Darren just knows what it's about and knows how to teach his players to, you know, focus on the game. And same with Central Arizona. It's going to be some good baseball, because I think you saw a number of those playoffs in the Midwest at 22 to whatever. So
right.
Sounds like everybody can hit some home runs, and getting laid into the pitching staff and pitching order. I think we should be able to see some of those 4-hour games. Good for you.
That's okay. I did one on Saturday with Mesa and
yeah,
Edwards,
that's right. So it seems to be everywhere, because San Angelo did the same thing.
So. Yeah, that was a long game that was basically over in the fifth inning for the Mavericks.
Right.
But you mentioned Central Arizona. They win the West. They beat Salt Lake City Community College. For Salt Lake, you're thinking, man, are we ever going to get out to Grand Junction?
I know. I feel for those guys, and they had a very strong club, and that was, and then they beat Central early and had to, I guess, go to the IF game, and some solid baseball there by both teams. So it's what's fun. It's everybody's smiling right now. The weather's supposed to be great. You guys have been so supportive of us and getting the word out, and tickets seem to be going off without a hitch, and people calling, they're going to be at the banquet. And so our tradition that we've kind of lost over the last couple of years with COVID and not having a tournament and then not having a banquet 2 years in a row, I think people are starting to feel that tradition again.
And just a reminder, get your tickets now. They're online only, JUCOGJ.org. And we are actually going to have, we do have some physical tickets we will be giving away on the radio show. So those do exist, believe it or not. You might want to, if you can, frame them for posterity in your man cave or whatever. But we'll have some of those to give away on our station and the other stations here in our group the next couple of days. But JUCOGJ.org for that. Of course, you mentioned the banquet makes its return on Friday night. And this year, unfortunately, Jerry Schimmel, not able to speak because he's covering the Rockies right now. But it has a video presentation that you're going to have on Friday night. And then going to have Rob Fournier, Wabash.
Yes, will
be one,
story,
of, one of the eight coaches that'll be going in. And it's nice for Rob that he'll be here coaching his team. That's always like when Perry Keith and Connor State came here and he went in. It's always nice when their team is here with them when they go into the Coaches Hall of Fame.
Well, and that, and Snead being the first time ever appearance. Yep. And they're excited. Their people have been calling us and getting Lindsay, our assistant, down in the JUCO office, asking some questions, and the energy in their voice and the excitement in the voice. And Lindsay,
Coach Underwood,
he's got a personality.
He's excited. He's got a big personality. He is thrilled to be out here.
Yeah, no, and that's fun. You want that experience, whether it's two games or all the way to the championship game. So we'll make sure they have a great experience. And those are the little things we all do as a committee and as a community to make these memories last forever. So it's pretty fun for all of us.
Alpine Bank Junior College World Series Chairman Jamie Hamilton with us on the program today. And so, Jamie, what else do we need to let people know about, fans know about, leading up to the start of the tournament on Saturday in terms of, I know there was talk about kind of the little kids area or
yes.
the football field. So
yeah.
some of those things that maybe people that are maybe changes this year for the tournament.
Right, exactly. The Dick's Sporting Goods on a national level has helped us and is really focusing on JUCO World Series at the assistance of NJCAA. And they're going to have a fan zone, a speed of pitch, a little batting cage. And for all the youngsters, instead of throwing those tennis balls up against the brick wall, they'll be able a chance to see how
like Steve McQueen in The Great Escape
yes,
when, he's
exactly,
in, when he's in solitary.
Exactly. So those type of things, a little bit more organized that way. Because we have, with the new construction, we have more power usage all the way down the left field line, food vendors, food trucks will be spread out a little bit, so not so congested behind home plate. And that'll be nice, a little bit brighter, as we talked about in previous interviews. And I think the biggest thing is, you know, get there when you can get there. We're going to have people, volunteers in the committee, and probably the most uneducated is going to be me on Saturday morning and as a volunteer trying to figure out some of those things. But be patient as we got the volunteers to go through security with bag checks to make sure there's safety going on, and all the great people that help with parking and just all those little things that make it a great tournament. Just be ready to enjoy the day, and as we say, try to do it with a smile.
And once again, get your tickets now. JUCOGJ.org, and they're on sale. All the tickets are on sale right now online, correct?
That is correct.
So single day, all those things are on sale right now, JUCOGJ.org. And you can reach out to the website as well if you have a problem, or at the stadium on Saturday. There'll be folks there at the ticket office that can kind of help walk you through it if you're having some challenges with getting your tickets on your smartphone. So when we look at this weekend, like I said, number one, knock on wood, weather looks like it's going to be really good. I am excited just for people to see what the new stands and everything.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there was the grand opening, the unveiling.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody obviously was out there. A lot
right.
of fans, this will be their first time. And
right.
for you, what's been the best change, the biggest plus in terms of the new seats over at the stadium?
Okay, well, number one, the new seats will give it a little bit more space and easier to find your seat, and then still have the bleacher seating, but with more leg space there too. So that's some of the things we did. But probably the biggest change that people are going to recognize is the new lighting. We tested it last night. The new LED, which
these are similar to the ones at Bergman, correct?
Exactly.
And those are great. And the players are raving about those.
Yeah, well, it's fascinating. The people that did the light check said that it was already 27% more light at the home plate than it was just 2 weeks ago when
Fantastic.
We tested it. So those are little things that you're going to recognize. And what's fascinating is you used to have, four or five rows of big lights. Now you got basically two rows of lights in it, and it's even brighter. So that, I think, you'll really notice at the night games.
And so along with, of course, the seats, the lighting makes for the players to have a certainly better view at home play, set of pitches at night games, picking up balls in the outfield at night as well. It's going to be a big plus in terms of the overall playability of the field over at Sam Saplesio Field. Don't forget, it all starts this Saturday. Our first broadcast, 9 o'clock in the morning. We've got JUCO today. What, 8:30?
8:20.
8:20. Thank you. He runs it back here.
I know.
I try to guide it out there as best I can.
I know that feeling. I do the same thing with the JUCO.
I know that we're on the air at 9 o'clock. At least my part of it, anyway. Hey, Jamie, I appreciate it. Thank you so much, sir. Always great to talk with you. And go JUCO.
There you go. Thank you.
Get your tickets now. JUCOGJ.org. They're on sale online only, and we'll see you at the ballpark this weekend. And, of course, we're also looking forward to next Thursday trying to do our Final Four again, or the Final Four coaches like we did last year for that final couple of days of the Junior College Baseball World Series. Next hour, we'll switch from JUCO to Colorado Mesa Baseball. Chris Hanks will join us next hour on the Jim Davis Show.